when are you going to have it here?
Well, we'll talk about it. The last thing I need to do is hire you or Lou to go over the cellar.
Good evening. I'd like to call this meeting of the Carson City Airport Authority to get to order. It is Wednesday, May 23rd, 2018 at 6:02 p.m. at the Sierra Room, 851 East William Street, Carson City, Nevada. Madam Secretary, could you call the roll, please?
Chairperson Law?
Here.
Vice Chair Bow?
Here.
Member Barrett?
Here.
Member Golden?
Here.
Member Harris?
Here.
Member Harvey?
Here.
Member Rogers?
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. Would you stand and join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please? The next item is the approval of the minutes of the past meetings of the Airport Authority. Do I have any additions or corrections or comments on the minutes as submitted? Do I have any public comment on the minutes of the last meeting? Hearing none and no discussion, I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the previous meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Member Harvey, second by Member Barrett. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None? Thank you very much. Item D, modification of the agenda. The chairman reserves the right to modify the agenda in order to most effectively process the agenda items. Items may be taken out of order. Items may be combined for consideration by the authority. Items may be pulled or removed from the agenda at any time. Do I have any suggested changes for the order of the agenda this evening? Hearing none, we will proceed. Public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the airport authority may speak on agendized and non-agendized matters related to the airport. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person or topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please request the chairman to calendar the matter for a future airport authority meeting. Do I have any public comment at this time? Seeing none, we will move on to item G. There are no awards and presentations this evening. Item one, for possible action, to approve the Carson City Airport Authority tentative budget as the final budget for the fiscal year July 1, 2018 through June 30, 2019. Authorization to certify and transmit the same to the Department of Transportation and the Nevada Tax Commission. Authorization for staff to make the required filings. Ms. Cohn, please state your name and continue.
For the record, Beth Cohn Cole, a partner at Cohn & Company. I took the recommendations from the board, and you have an updated detailed budget. This isn't what's submitted to the Department of Taxation. It's much more summarized, and I'd like to briefly review the changes that were made from the last meeting. There are three items highlighted: the avgas tax at approximately $120, long-term parking fees at approximately $500, and the open house income at $2,500. Down below, that in the neighborhood item was moved to marketing and website. So it was marketing website was $1,500. It was increased for that in the neighborhood of $1,500 to a total of $3,000. And the accounting and audit was broken out between accounting other and auditing of $12,000. And those were the changes that were made since the last meeting.
Any questions for Ms. Cohn? Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And I'd like to point out, for the record, we'll do an augmentation, a summary form based on these numbers that were estimated by management for June 30 of 18. We'll do an augmentation for your next meeting so that you're not over budget. So we'll augment the rock sales because your income was up.
Thank you very much. Any discussion on what we've heard from Ms. Cohn? Any public comment on this item? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to approve the tentative budget for fiscal year July 1, 2018 through June 30, 2019, and direct staff to make the required filings.
I move. Second.
Mr. Harris has moved. Mr. Rogers has seconded. Any discussion on the motion? None heard. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Item number two, for possible action to approve Cohn & Company LLP to conduct the 2017-18 audit of the Carson City Airport Authority. Ms. Cohn Cole.
I don't know if that's me. Again, for the record, Beth Cohn Cole, Cohn & Company. So I submitted the engagement letter with a not to exceed for all services of $20,000, but I will keep the audit at the $12,000, and the $8,000 will be just based on what I do additionally as requested.
Any questions of Ms. Cohn Cole? Thank you. Any public comment on this item? Any further discussion on this item? Mr. Harvey.
I just want to make a comment that, Beth, your expertise and assistance in this airport has been greatly helpful, especially with the new transition we've had recently. And your expertise and assistance has been really critical to us being successful in the transition. I want to thank you for all that you've done for us and getting this set up for us. And
thank you.
It's really been appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you from me as well. hearing no public comment on this item and hearing no further discussion on this item, I would accept a motion to approve Cone & Cole LLP to conduct the fiscal year 2017-18 audit of the Carson City Airport Authority.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
That was Mr. Barrett. I have a motion by Mr. Harvey and a second by Mr. Barrett. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Nay. None heard. Motion carries. Moving on to item number 3. Presentation of Reno Lumber Project North Taxiway Delta on Arrowhead Drive and Sierra Skyways Hangar Project. Is there a representative here from Manhard Consulting? Please come forward, state your name, spell your last name, and proceed.
Madam Chairman, Chairperson Law, and members of the authority, and Mr. Moan, my name is Keith Schaefer with Manhard Consulting, spelled S-H-A-F-F-E-R. I am here just to give an update, really, on what's going on around the airport with the construction off of Arrowhead Drive with Reno Lumber. I don't have a presentation, per se. I thought you might have some questions. You're seeing some dirt being turned out there, and we're right in proximity to the airport, and of course there's some FAA guidelines that we have to meet, some notices that we have filed with the FAA, and we thought it would be good if we were just here to answer some questions and make you aware of what's going on. If I might, I'll just give you a quick review of what that project entails and what it's going to look like when it's done, and give you an idea also of where we're at right now and what the first phase is. The construction that's happening out there right now is just the creation of a lumber yard, a flat graded area for Reno Lumber to stage wholesale, not retail lumber. This isn't going to be a lumber yard where you can go and buy your nails and your hardware and your tools. This is a place where Reno Lumber will provide staging and then packaging for contractors along the Highway 50 corridor and all in Carson City, Carson Valley area. The project consists right now of an office building that is up near Arrowhead Drive, one story, 2,200 square foot office building, not taller than probably 14 feet to the peak of the roof. The site will have yard lights that are not taller than 25 feet, and that fits within the surface profile, and I'm not sure I have these terms all correct, but however far we need to be from the main runway over and up at an angle of one and whatever. In the future, and part of the project, the desire will be to have some lumber storage that is covered with a building that might be 25 feet tall up against the fence next to taxiway Bravo?
Delta.
That's okay, the north taxiway. And that would I think be the closest kind of structure or building to the airport. But we believe that if we kept that under 25 feet, we were also in a place where we didn't have any special construction requirements. We have filed the notices required for FAA. We filed those sometime in April. But I think there were some comments from the FAA where they said, hey, we need more information, so it probably didn't show up as an official study yet. We have since provided them with that updated information, probably closer to the 9th of May is when that would have happened, I guess. I'm just talking to your engineer, and he hadn't seen anything as early as May 8th or 9th, and I know that's when we had some correspondence, at least through the email process and the online process. So that's Reno Lumber. Once again, there will be some area lights and it's going to be largely a lumber staging yard there for Carson Lumber, Reno Carson Lumber. They're changing their name from Reno Lumber to Reno Carson Lumber. So that's that project. Any questions that you might have about that? Any concerns?
I do have one question, Mr. Schaefer. The light standards that you're talking about, are they shaded so that they're not an impediment to people going on and off the airport?
Yes. By city code, they have to be, we had to provide a photometric diagram to make sure that they were 100% cut off downlighting, and that they don't shine light on the property, off the property, onto somebody else's property. In addition to that, I think the electrical engineer associated with the project has proposed, so that they have it in their bid and part of the construction, should it be necessary, indicator, some sort of an indicator light on top of those, a red, whatever, obstruction light, some sort of an obstruction light, and possibly even on whatever appropriate corners of the 25-foot storage building next to the fence.
So. Any other questions of Mr. Schaefer? Any public comment on this item? Hearing none, thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you. I haven't looked at the agenda, and I don't know. Is there another agenda item for Sierra Skyway?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you. I'll sit down. And I don't know that you need
well,
to.
Well,
I'm sorry.
It's included in this one.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I didn't see the agenda, so I didn't know if I was out of turn. As an update to another project that's happening on the airport, and that I think you are familiar with, but I think that was the item I was really more prepared to come here to talk about today. Sierra Skyway, Inc. is proposing and has submitted plans for a site improvement permit and for the building design of the hangar complex, the first hangar building at Taxiway Charlie and Bravo, right? The intersection there. And those are going to be hangars very much like what was proposed some 8 years ago or more, 10 years ago now. And we're moving forward with that. I think one of the items that that came up that we tried to, we ended up mimicking what had happened in the first building of the old Heritage Park that got done, it had to do with the fact that there was a fire service shed or building component that was on the exterior of the main hangar building, and happened to be off of the lease property in the utility right-of-way that runs between those hangars and the hangars immediately to the south. So we designed our buildings with that in mind to be the same. It's a little 9x9 building just for a riser room for fire sprinklers. We felt like that didn't obstruct any access through the easement area. But, of course, that will require a change to the lease, and I think that that's something you're going to work out with the owner. I just wanted to report to you and let you know that that's in total would be probably – it's outside of the foundation of that is 9x9, outside of the envelope of the current lease line. So it's 81 square foot per building for the first two or the main buildings. The third building that's up closer to the taxiway B – won't need to be in outside of the current lease boundary. It'll stay within the lease boundary. So if there's a change to the lease, it would be in the amount of, I think, roughly 162 square feet currently shown on the plans in a specific area for the first building. And we have the fire marshal, the fire department, has given us written notification that he has no problem with that. So from a fire standpoint, no problem. He's only reviewed the building plans for the first building, even though it's going to be similar for the second. We'll get him to put on his letterhead an acknowledgement that both of those don't inhibit their operation. But right now he's done that in an email and indicated through his design that he doesn't have a problem, that there's plenty of room for them to maneuver in that utility easement. As far as the project goes, we're into the city for permits, and we're kind of at their mercy. We're waiting to hear from them. We kind of hope to hear from them sooner than now, but they get busy, and so we're trying to push them along. But we're moving forward. There's no other issues that I know of with that project. So any questions?
I have a couple. You said that they have sent you email verification. Has that been provided to Mr. Mullen?
I believe it has.
Okay. And secondarily, you're aware that Mr. Takas has worked with the building department to make sure that the special use permit's still effective, correct?
That is correct, and I think we collaborated on that a little bit. So,
I would give Mr. Takas. Schaefer the credit for that, because I think he was a jump ahead of me and was able to clear that up. But, yeah, I was working on it.
That needed to be headed off at the pass. Yeah.
One additional thing I'd like to request with respect to this additional 9 by 9 foot area, can you provide us with a legal description of that area so that we can attach that to an amendment to a lease?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Thanks.
We can do that. I was reluctant to do that for both of the buildings right now because they're getting ready to build the first one, and should, for some reason, in the building process, you know how that works.
Yeah.
You know, the fire department, where the connection is. We don't maybe necessarily know where it will be for the second building. So if you want us to do it for both of them, we can do it. And if it has to be adjusted, we can do that. Or we just do it for the first building. Whatever.
I would suggest we do it for both, because if it turns out it's right for the second one, then we're done.
Perfect.
And if we just do it for the first one, and then we know we're going to have to go back on the second one. And amendment of the lease is not a difficult process. It has to be approved by this board, and then it has to be approved by the Board of Supervisors. I'm not expecting any problems, particularly given that the fire marshal is okay with the width of the accessway. But my guess is it's going to be quicker. We have a shot at doing it in one shot. Let's try and do that. Okay.
We can do that. I can have my surveyors put together a legal description on that.
Any other questions of Mr. Schaefer on this item?
Can I just add one other item? And this is in the future.
Certainly.
And I want this to be on your radar and a matter of note and record. The project that we are moving forward with, at the end of the day, is a condominium hangar project. Currently, right now, the special use permit to allow the construction on that use, and I agree with Mr. Takas that, you know, we don't understand why a hangar requires a special use permit on the airport, but it's because of colors and those kinds of things, and that's what the city has required. But that special use permit process, and even though that special use permit was approved, they built the first building and said, okay, the use has been initiated, so the special use permit is in force. And that's how they justified that and said, now you can continue to build those without a special use permit. However, during the downturn, when only the first building of that original Heritage Park project was developed, and only the first building was built, and the rest of the remainder parcel was given back to the authority in the city, the tentative map and the subdivision map that went with the condominium part of that expired. So we will be initiating with the Planning Commission and the city a tentative subdivision map for condominium to refresh that tentative, and that will be, you'll be seeing, we're hoping to get on the agenda for that in the next few months. We're trying to make an application to the city in June, so that means it would be July or August would be the Planning Commission meeting, to move forward with the perfecting of whatever they require, and then the recording of a final map for that, again, the re-recording and the creation of that final map for that condominium development. So you'll see that come up. Don't confuse that with the special use permit and say, oh, I thought that was all done. We are going to be going through an entitlement land development process. In the meantime, we're building the first building so that he can get it vertical and get some tenants, maybe lease that out. And then as he gets the final map, then maybe he'll be able to sell those and continue on, and that's the idea. So we're going forward with an improvement plan before a subdivision process, which is common in these kinds of things, to get a building going and then do the subdivision process. So I just wanted to be aware of that, and if you have any concerns or questions, I'd be happy to answer those about that process.
I do have one other question about the location of the water riser room that you're, the utility riser room that you're talking about. Do you, Brian, do you know if that coincides with the maps we got from the city as far as access to those lines? Are they adjacent to his building? The ones you sent me that show existing water, stubbed out water stuff?
I believe so. If you give me a moment, I will check on that.
Just at your convenience. You can cover that in your engineers meeting if you'd like. But I know they gave us maps of where those existing utilities are, and I just wanted to know if it's adjacent to the property where you need them.
Yes, and if it doesn't line up exactly, it'll be constructed that way. Okay. On our plans that are in for permit right now, it shows a connection.
Okay. So. All right. Any other questions of Mr. Schaefer? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Any public comment on this part of this item? None seen. We will move on to the next item. Item number four, for discussion and possible action, review of proposed changes to the draft legislation updating NRS 844 regarding the Carson City Airport Authority, make additional modifications, or give working group further direction. Mr. Takus, would you like to start this one?
Let me start it off. Steve Takus, Airport Council. So what I've sent to you is kind of a red line, but it's really a green space and yellow space draft. The yellow markings were the changes that you approved at the last meeting, and that's the version that we submitted to Assemblyman Kramer, and he has submitted to LCB for bill drafting. But as you recall from that meeting, you set up a committee with a very short time frame for response to look at it to address other changes that had either been suggested by some of the board members or by members of the public or others. And so what you have in green are the additional changes that we'd like you to consider. And I can't say that I'm either for or against them. I think they're good ideas. And if you like them, I think you should adopt them. If you don't like them, you don't adopt them. But here, let me just run through quickly what they are, because I think they're all good ideas. The first one is in Section 4, there was a proposal to change the number of members from 7 to 5 on the idea that that would make us a little bit quicker to move, a little more nimble on our feet, easier to meet a quorum, you know, less burdensome when you're trying to schedule a meeting because you don't have as many people if you have to schedule a special meeting, things like that. But then the question is, okay, if you're going to reduce it to 5, who do you remove? And there were kind of two different schools of thought, one during our meeting, which is we always have trouble finding a second manufacturer. Let's remove the manufacturer. And then the citizen at large doesn't have to have any kind of connection whatsoever with the airport. And we thought, okay, if there's going to be somebody who's not on here, it would be a person who doesn't have any real connection to the airport. And so those were the two that were proposed. Then the airport manager and I had some additional discussions. We thought, well, you know, it kind of doesn't seem fair to the manufacturers to take one out when you have two FBOs. So maybe instead it should be you take out one manufacturer and one FBO, because those are the two entities that each have two representatives instead of one representative. Again, just an idea for consideration. The second part of the Section 4 change was just a rewording of the two successive terms. And I honestly, I can't remember. It might have been Member Rogers who came up with what I think is a clearer wording to make clear that you can be appointed to two successive terms and then you're out for at least 4 years. And so we've changed that wording. We're not changing what it's doing. It just sounds like it's clear wording. Okay. And then I'm just going to run through them all quickly and then you can discuss them all. Section 8, the current law refers to some NRS sections and then refers to a law without an NRS section. And so Member Vowell made what I think is a very good suggestion is, why don't you put them both in so we know what we're talking about? Because if you put in an NRS section, we don't know what that is unless you have to go look it up. And if you just put a public law section, sometimes it's hard to find the NRS so you can actually see what laws are applying. And so all we did was insert the corresponding either name of the law to go with the ones that had the NRS in it, or the NRS to go with the ones that had the name of the law. Okay, under 9, we made, kind of a significant change, but it really is a cleanup change. The old language used to say that we could only get things by gift or devise, and we had inserted, no, we also purchase things for the airport. In fact, it's very rare that we get stuff for free. Usually we have to buy it. And then it used to say with the board approval of the Board of Supervisors, we acquire real and personal property. Well, A, we've never really gone to them for the acquisition of personal property. If we have to go buy some equipment or some supplies or something, we just do it. And so for that part of it, it's really just trying to make the law reflect the reality. And then the real property, what we thought really should be in there is not so much our leasing. The leasing is something, the management of the airport is something that is given to the airport authority, both by NRS 844 fundamentally and by the cooperative agreement we have with the city, which basically says, you guys do everything with the airport. And so with respect to leases, we thought, okay, why do we require each of these to also go to the Board of Supervisors? So we've trimmed that back as well. However, importantly, we've kept a provision saying, hey, look, if we're going to change the boundaries of the airport, sell any land, do something like that, then it should be go to the Board of Supervisors because, after all, fundamentally, the Board of Supervisors own the footprint land that the airport is on. We also got into a discussion about that because the original law said they were supposed to transfer it to the airport authority, but that never happened, and it never happened because the FAA opined that the airport authority did not have independent ad valorem taxing authority and therefore could not be a grant recipient. And so back in 1990, the city and the airport authority got together and said, hey, let's do a cooperative agreement because we want to continue getting these FAA grants. So let's do it together. The city remains the grant sponsor. The airport authority runs the airport. Then we made a change on the changes in laws governing zoning. The FAA assurances say that we need to have compatible zoning around the airport. It doesn't say we try to, we recommend to. It says we need to. And so we changed the language from, instead of recommend to the Board of Supervisors, specify to them. So my thought is this is a way of telling the Board of Supervisors, here's what the FAA requirement is. Now, we can't make the Board of Supervisors do anything. And Supervisor Barrett's over there laughing. We can't make them do anything, but I think we want to give them the clearest message we can to help them in their zoning task to say, okay, here's what's required under the FAA, not here's what we'd like to see. There's this crazy line in here that says that we were to provide it doesn't make sense. The airport board, which is the airport authority, shall provide emergency services for the authority. Now, I don't know what that means. I looked it up. I could not find an FAA requirement or anything else that addressed that. I'm not sure why it was in here in the first place. Unfortunately, the person who drafted this law is long gone. He's deceased. And so our recommendation is to take that out. In the very next sentence, it says, contract with any person, including people who transport passengers or cargo by air. We don't think that there's any need to include the clause, including people who transport passengers and cargo by air. I mean, if you can contract with any person, certainly that includes the universe of things. It includes that. I checked to see if there was a transportation law, because we were thinking, oh, maybe there's a transportation law that requires that. I couldn't find anything that requires that language. And then it says, any contract between the board and a fixed base operator must be submitted for approval by the Board of Supervisors. Again, that's not something we do. If we need to have something done by an FBO, whatever it is, we just make those arrangements and we get it done. If we had to wait for a Board of Supervisors meeting, and that day-to-day business stuff wouldn't happen. And so our thought is that that line is kind of surplusage and doesn't really recognize the reality of today's world where things happen quickly and you need to deal with them. Okay, and then in jumping ahead, section 24, this is the section on hiring and firing, and it And, you know, we never implemented this section. You know, the section says the board may adopt procedures. However, we did get in an argument with a past employee over whether it was mandatory or not. His attorney was arguing it's mandatory. You look through this list of things, and, you know, for an organization that maybe has 20 or 200 employees, yeah, maybe this makes sense. For an organization that has two employees, and who knows, if we're really successful, we might grow it to four someday. You know, these kinds of criteria, I think, are really kind of a ball and chain. I don't think they're helpful to us. Certainly, we're not going to discriminate against anyone. Federal law prohibits us from doing most of the nasty things that you could think of anyway. So our thought was to remove those surplusage. We remove those provisions because we see them as surpluses. One of the things we did retain, though, is the right of an employee for any discipline to have to be heard and to have a review process. Now, our manager reports to you, so I guess that review process would also be before you. But if our manager was disciplining our operations guy or maintenance guy or, you know, someone else down the line, then there would be an avenue of relief where that person could still come before you before the next step, which anything we do wrong, our next step is not the Board of Supervisors, it's actually the court system. Okay, and then 26, we deleted 26 entirely. 26 said, once you're formed, within a certain amount of time, you need, the city needs to transfer certain things to the airport authority, equipment, funds, things like that. All that stuff's already been completed. There's really no reason to have a law that says, you know, within this time period of 1989, you need to do this. It's all been done. 28, 28 said that if you don't have time to hire a lawyer, you can use the DA's office in that interim period. Clearly, that window has gone away, too. You've had hired counsel now for a pretty long time. And unfortunately, due to some personality clashes, the DA at the time sent a very harsh letter saying he didn't want to have anything to do with the airport authority. Unfortunately, one of the airport board members wrote an editorial article that just trashed the DA without calling him first and talking to him. And that, of course, created a lot of ill will. Okay, and then lastly, Section 29, which is the last section. We've adjusted that, well, it says as soon as practicable after October 1st, 1989, you should do these appointments. Well, that kind of window is closed, so that language can come out. But then we still have the Board of Supervisors shall appoint to the board, you know, the people on four-year anniversaries of those initial dates so that we always have staggered terms so that we don't get into a situation where, oops, all five or all seven members all expire at the same time and we have no continuity and no way to bridge things. The difference there in the green is one to take out that lead-in sentence, which should be taken out. The other part is related to that 7-5. So if you don't change the vote to change the makeup from 7-5, then that other change that's made to the end of that falls away as well. So that's what we did, and I can certainly answer any questions you have, and so can Member Rogers and Member Vowell and the airport manager, all of us who were involved in the discussions. And it was very fruitful. I mean, it was fun. I think we accomplished a lot in thinking through the problems while we were doing it.
I would like to commend you all for your work on this. As far as I'm concerned, it was a yeoman's piece of work. The only comment I have is my concern over changing it from 7-5, creating a problem where if a future chairman or myself want to establish a subcommittee that has a broad range of expertise, if we put three people on that committee, we have a quorum. And that, to me, limits what we're able to do widely. Secondarily, my other comment would be as far as reducing the number of FBO representatives or manufacturing representatives or members of the public. I think the more expertise, the wider the experience foundation for this group, I would rather keep us at 7 and have it slightly unwieldy than to go to 5 and lose that ability. So those are my comments on my review of it. The other thing is when you reduce it like that, you need to have a chairman and a vice chairman and a treasurer. That gets really skinny as far as having enough members to pick those people and do it well. So that's my comment as far as that's concerned. I do think that in section 9, where you talk about the internal control portion of, you know, having the city responsible for one part of our operations and us responsible for the other, that allows us some separation of duties, which is an important internal control item, and I think that that's important. I think that this still addresses that, the split between our responsibilities. So are there any other comments from members? Mr. Golden.
Great work by those involved. Nice cleanup. Steve, at the very top, there's a typo. I just want to bring it to your attention. Recommendation.
Yeah. Oh, I purposely...
Just to make sure I was paying attention,
no,
right?
No, I purposely shortened it so it would fit on one line. I apologize.
Nice cover.
As you know, Steve, and maybe some other people know in this room, I presided over an airport board that was a publicly elected board that had its own governance. We had our, basically like a city, but we were an airport. We were in actually in two counties, a bi-county agency, okay, that was in unincorporated territory. We had no oversight, and the airport to this day has no oversight by any other governmental entity. It was its own and still is and will remain its own governmental entity. So if we had to build a new building, we issued our own building permits. There was no, you know, going anywhere for approval. We purchased land, we purchased our own land, no approval. This operated as its own governmental entity. One of the things, though, that happened, and I know Steve remembers this well, was back in 2004, the board was seized by a hostile group of citizens. They got themselves on the board, elected on the board, with the sole purpose of tearing down the foundation of the airport. That board has 5 members. 3 of them got elected because, just like this board, there were rotations. In presidential election years, the way it worked out, there were always 3 seats available. In midterm election years, there were 2 seats that would come up for election. It's pretty easy to get 3 elected. It's pretty tough to get 4. And I dealt with these people. The damage they caused to that airport has taken, they got on the board in 2004. The airport, I would say now, is turning the corner. For the first time in 14 years, they put a shovel in the ground to build a new hangar. Okay? I am just vehemently opposed to reducing the number of airport authority members from 5 to 7, because the unintended consequences of creating a smaller governing body for this airport are such that things of that nature can and very might will happen. Also, the other concept of reducing the number of FBO participants, I have a real problem with that. The FBOs on the airport have more of a vested interest than any other members of the airport authority here. And to only have one party representing the FBO community on the airport, I take issue with. There are multiple FBOs on the airport, and they are the largest tenants by land area, possibly by financial contribution. You know, the manufacturers are off airport. They are not on airport property. So, you know, the concept of reducing the the manufacturers, I guess I'm ambivalent to, but to reduce the number of FBO participants on the authority, I think it's just wrong. And Adam, let me be very clear, too. I'm not opting for a second term. So you're going to have to find two more but when I'm done. But the reality is the FBO community at the airport has a vested interest in the operational aspect and success of the airport, where the other members of the airport authority, they do, but they don't have that vested interest. So those are my comments, and I'm just going to state for the record, you won't get my vote to reduce the number of participants on this airport authority from 7 to 5.
Vice Chair Vowell.
So I just want to address a couple of the words that were just spoken. There was never any intent on the committee's part to devoice or take away any particular segment's voice on the table. When we went in and started talking, we had a couple of goals for the committee, which actually still exists. We're going to meet at least, I think, a couple more times to kind of finalize this document and incorporate the feedback that we're getting from the full board. One of the goals was to do everything that we could to streamline the operations of the airport itself, whether it was for the board or for someone wishing to do business with the airport. From personal experience and other people's experiences, things like writing leases often take a couple of runs through this board and then through the Board of Supervisors, and next thing you know, something that should have been, you know, a 2 or 3 week process turns into 4, 5, 6, 7 months. So a lot of the cleanup language that we looked at in this was kind of motivated by those ideas of what can we do to make the airport a friendlier place for folks to do business, that want to do business here. In terms of reducing the size of the board, that was actually my suggestion, and this is absolutely nothing that I, like, would ever go to bat for. It was an idea that I thought would help make things run a little bit smoother, and the feedback that we've gotten from the two other members right now who've just spoken, those ideas weren't really voiced in the committee meeting. So this is the first time that we're hearing that kind of pushback, and we'll definitely take those comments on board and rethink what we were looking at in terms of how we were trying to do that. And then one of my personal goals for the committee was to take a look at this legislation and figure out, there are a lot of ambiguities in it in terms of there are certain things on one hand where it's like you have to do this and then you should do this, and then we looked at there were other clauses that said, well, you know what, you don't really have to do anything you don't want to do because we're just giving you carte blanche to do whatever you want to do. And we wanted to make sure that there was some clarity in terms of what the city is expected to do, what the airport authority is expected to do, and basically revamp this and then get rid of the cooperative agreement with the city as much as we could, incorporate the goals of the cooperative agreement into the legislation so that, this board was created to manage the airport. Let us do that. Let's go write leases, do the business of the airport without having to go back to the board of supervisor for every single item and say, Mother, may I please have a dollar to do this or do that. So those were the goals for the committee. And like I said, it's still a work in progress. So we will definitely take these ideas under consideration and come up with maybe purple for the next iteration. And see what we can do to make it a little bit.
Neon green.
Oh, okay. Neon green for the next iteration. Specifically, I want to address this. We didn't spend a lot of time on it, but the idea of reducing some of those clauses that were in the employment part, the basic issue that we had was the phrase that says, which must include. Well, you know what? There's no way to reconcile this with 101 different things that are going on, and every time we take an employee action, having to go back and look at the law and see if we can actually do this or not. It seemed a little bit onerous on a board for being able to get anything done in a reasonable amount of time. There was a comment that was made that there's an employee rule book or a manual or something like that that the chair was working on that was going to have a lot of these policies and procedures, and I don't think that it's necessary for us to make a laundry list of 101 items that need to go into the law when we've got a rule book that we're in the process of writing and setting up that's a living document that can be changed as we need to change it, versus this document can only get changed every couple of years if we can find somebody to sponsor us. Yes. And it seems like it wasn't really substantially updated since it was created 28 years ago. So in the interest of trying to move things along and make things easier for us, a lot of these strikeouts on this were literally taken from that ideal of let's just get rid of some of this crust, make it go away, and find other ways to deal with some of those issues in the future, whether it be airport rules or Title 19 or something like that, that could have a quicker and faster, more expedient resolution rather than having to go to the state legislature to, again, ask, Mother, may I please do this?
Thank you very much. One of the things I might add, Member Harris, did you want to say something? Member Harvey, Treasurer Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First want to say, I think, like everyone else, great work on this. I agree with so much of it, and I agree. You don't put a laundry list of do's and don'ts on your employment. That's a handbook. You have legal laws, federal laws we all have to follow. It makes no sense to put that in there, and I appreciate that. We do have to follow through with that, our own handbook and guidelines, but I think that's something that you have worked on and I have as well, as I think we can help Mr. Moan complete that. So first of all, I appreciate that. I have to echo the concerns about the reduction. I do not think we should be messing with that right now. For all the reasons that have been said, I think it causes us some real problems from a management perspective. In talking to the previous members on the board for my organization in manufacturing, they also had concerns about this as well, for much of what you've said, and from our own perspective. Yeah, it's been hard to get some of those on board, but honestly, that's what this was built for, this whole area here. Manufacturing was supposed to be simpatico to the process, and we have a lot of issues with building. You know, our structure's right on it. There's a lot of rules we have to follow, FAA rules, too, just so we're on it as well. But anyway, we have the same concern, so I'm on board with everything with the exception of the change in the number.
Member Rogers, would you like to go first?
I'd just like to echo that the change from a 7 to 5 was an attempt to streamline the process of finding board members and allowing people who wanted to have, achieve consensus on the board to have fewer people to work with. Yes, so, but I don't think that that's anything that needs to be defended. I mean, if the board agrees that they want to stay with 7, that's perfectly fine. I do want to comment that I think that we still should have a cooperative agreement with the city, but I think that it can be greatly reduced, just like we've taken a reduction here. So, I mean, the city and the airport have to work together on a variety of subjects, and we ought to have an agreement that states that we're going to do that and how we're going to do that. I think we can probably cut that document down to half or a third of its current size, and that's what we were trying to set up with what we were doing here. So those are my only additional comments.
Member Barrett.
Thank you. I think I would make a fourth vote against reducing. I agree this is a great work product, but the reduction doesn't meet with my approval for the reasons that I'm not an airport expert, and neither is the member at large. And usually the person who's a board of supervisors member is probably not going to be someone. And I think we need that on this board, and a 7-member board makes sense to me too. Sometimes you have a 5-member board. I sit on one called the Board of Supervisors, and a couple of people go on vacation. You got some problems if they go at the same time. Things we don't even think of, and yet they do crop up. Finally, and I don't disagree that there are reasons to look at some of the things in here to be considered, but I would say that in 50 years of watching government in one form or another, more if you include the fact that my parents rammed it down my throat at the dinner table because they talked about it a lot as two newspaper people, and 5 years of being in government, I've said to my colleagues on that Board of Supervisors, and I say here too, sometimes government works too fast and sometimes government works too slowly. And the truth of the matter is I'd rather it work slowly than fast, if those are the two choices. It would be best if we all worked at the perfect, but then Goldilocks doesn't always show up in these circumstances. So slowly can be better in reality. Thank you.
Member Rogers.
I'd like to make one more comment, please. I personally think that if the only objections that the board expresses to the changes that have been made is the reduction from 7 to 5, that I, in the interest of keeping things moving and avoiding unnecessary meetings and so on and so forth, I can't think of a reason why we couldn't approve this as written, with the exception that we don't go from 7 to 5 and just push it forward and be done with it. With Mr. Vowell's, you know, concurrence.
Well, the one thing I would note is in the bill draft process that goes on in that building, the sooner you get information to them, the better off you are. I would rather see this go forward with that caveat than to wait another month to get it into them. The faster this comes out, the earlier it comes out in session, the better chance we are of getting it paid attention to early on and passage. So. That would have been my suggestion anyway. So it, moving forward, Vice Chair Bell.
Yeah, so that, I actually had a follow-on comment, which was a lot of the people who were the original players who created both the legislation and the cooperative agreement are no longer present. So my follow-on comment was it's actually time to do this. It's been 30 years since these original ideas were thrown out there. So I have no problem streamlining that and pushing along, although my caveat to that is we hadn't really addressed the items that were in the cooperative agreement in committee. We only went through the legislation, so I think at some point I would be 100% behind approving the changes that we've already done on here right now, and then have the committee continue for another week or two and go through the cooperative agreement and see what needs to be tossed on that. Otherwise, I think it's ready to go, because we spend a lot of time beating a horse.
I think that would be my suggestion as well. Rather than dismantle the subcommittee, to let it stay and do another month of review and then bring that back, that portion of it back to us. Are there any other comments?
Yes, I'd like to make one more. I, given my previous comment about government working too slowly or too quickly, I happen to agree with you. I've covered 4 legislatures. The 2 dangers I see here are A, not getting it in soon enough, but B, we want to make sure we have it as we want it as much as we possibly can, because as I've said before, once it goes in that hopper, those people down there can get a little crazy at times, and so they can start to rip this apart and do things. So we need to be sure what we want and have it in here, and I think we have a good sense of what we want.
Mr. Takis, any further comment?
Yeah, I was just going to say 2 quick things. One is, Member Rogers mentioned the fact that we probably should still have a cooperative agreement. I think we still need a cooperative agreement, because we want to make sure the city remains the funding source and that we can point to we have this arrangement set up to the FAA. So Section 26, which talked about transferring the stuff through a cooperative agreement, I'd like to tweak that language so it says we will still have a cooperative agreement for the relative duties and services provided to each other. And then beyond that, I would like to also have the opportunity to present this to the Board of Supervisors so we can get, I totally respect Supervisor Barrett's feedback, but I'd like to make sure that we don't have other supervisors that have issues with this, because frankly, when this thing goes into the legislature, there's really 2 entities that are most concerned about it, the Airport Authority and the city. We're really the only involved entities, and we want to make sure that we're on the same page, because that helps. And as I explained to other people, even when you've got a relatively small change on a narrow piece of legislation like this that only affects limited parties, we still run into horse trading. We still run into certain legislators who say, but what am I going to get for it? And it's kind of like, well, it doesn't impact you. So we still have that issue to deal with. And former Supervisor Livermore and I, on one simple little change to make the manufacturer position default, that if we couldn't find one, we could appoint somebody else, we got to the Senate side, and the chairman of the Senate committee it got referred to basically said, what are you going to give me for it? We said, we just want you to process it. This is unopposed legislation. We've already talked to our Senate representatives, and everybody's got to go. He still wanted something for it. And so, unfortunately, our legislative process, our political process, has become a little bit little bit twisted that way. And so you have to be, think about that too. And so I guess I'm amplifying in part what Supervisor Barrett said, which is we want to make sure we got it right and everybody's on board and get it in. And so if you're going to vote on it, I would ask you to vote on it less the change on the change from 7 to 5, and also permit me to tweak Section 26 so there's still a cooperative agreement, and then authorize Mr. Moen and I to take it to the Board of Supervisors.
Okay, any further comments? Any public comment on this item? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to approve the revised version of the legislative changes and direct staff to pursue the bill draft request with the two changes, deleting the portion that has to do with reducing the number of members and adding in the cooperative agreement provisions in Section 26.
Could I have a clarification on that? Because there's two places where it talks about that.
Sections 4 and 29.
Right, yeah. Right. So,
yeah.
So,
adjusting sections 4 and 29 to eliminate the change in number.
Exactly.
And then adding in the cooperative agreement language in 26 percent to Mr. Takis's comments.
And having staff
pursue the bill draft request with Assemblyman Kramer and the Legislative Council Bureau. So I would entertain that motion.
I move.
Who? Oh, okay. And do I have a second?
I do.
Okay. I have a motion by Member Harris and a second by Vice Chair Vowell. Do we have any discussion on the motion?
Did that motion include it going to the Board of Supervisors? I didn't hear
yes.
that. Yes.
Okay. Any public comment on this item before we vote? None heard. All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay. None heard. Motion carried. And thank you again for your work on this. That this has been a great improvement, I think, over what we have currently.
Just a follow-up question.
Member Harris.
Steve, what do you imagine the timing of informing the supervisors and actually this actually getting into the legislative hopper? What do you think?
If it's not too late to get on the first meeting in June, I'll get it on the first meeting. Otherwise, it'll be the second meeting in June. It'll be mid-June. Because I know that the window for us getting items to them so they can process them through and get them on their agenda and clear them with the city manager takes a little bit of time. But it'll be either the first meeting in June or the second meeting in June.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to item number 5 for possible action, discussion and approval of FAA AIP 32 rehabilitate taxiways A, B, C, and D, taxi lanes E, F, and access road, acceptance of Maxwell Asphalt as the low bidder at $229,588.30, and to authorize Chair Law to accept the FAA grant. Also to authorize staff to obtain board supervisor approval, alternatively reject all bids and reissue requests for bids or accept the only responsive bid for the three bids received. Mr. Fitzgerald.
Okay. Brian Fitzgerald, Atkins, Airport Engineer. This project was put out for bid, opened bids up at the end of Wednesday of last week, and turned out that a verbal indication that licensure was a general engineering or an AB general engineering during the pre-bid meeting was stated that those were not the only required licensures for the project. Because the project was basically a specialty project, and having a general engineering licensure meant that only larger companies could bid on the project. So it was researched and determined that a specialty license, A8 and the other one, A16, which compromised crack sealing and seal coat type activities, is acceptable licensure for this particular project. That was done as a verbal during the pre-bid meeting, but as it came to the issuance of the addendum, that was overlooked and was not put in the wording that those licensures can be included. And so when the bids were opened and the apparent low bid for Maxwell Asphalt was recommended at that time, it was also brought up that they did not have the required A or AB general licensure for the contract documents. So it was referred to council here as to what would prevail, the verbal or the written, and council has indicated that the written documents in this instance would prevail. So that would mean that the only responsible bid would be an A general or an AB general engineering licensure, which would be submitted by Q&D Construction. And Maxwell Asphalt and CR Contracting had the specialty licensures, and so they would be considered non-responsive at this time. So at this point, it's up to the board to determine which one of the items they would like to do. Reject all bids, award to Maxwell, or award to Q&D. And it is council's recommendation, my recommendation as well, that we reject all bids and clarify the language on this so that there is no ambiguities, and reissue for bidding and get new bids in prior to the next public meeting, which is, I believe, is the 20th, June 20th, yes. That can occur between now and then, and we could have new bids for you to look at that time. Any questions?
Before we get into the discussion of this, I'd like to take a five-minute recess. Okay, if we could resume our meeting, that would be helpful. Mr. Harvey, Mr. Harris. Okay, we are back to business. It was discussed and explained to us that there were deviations within the bid process that might jeopardize either the qualifications of the bid that was accepted by the paving company or Q&D, who were the unsuccessful bidders. It would be my suggestion at this point, having dealt with construction processes in the past, everybody needs to be on the same page. Everybody needs to have a level playing field, as they say. And it would be my suggestion, and I would entertain other discussion, but it would be my suggestion to set this bid process aside and reissue it to the earliest possible time henceforth. So any other comments on that? Mr. Golden.
Yeah, I hate to delay the project in any way, shape, or form. Unfortunately, I have been on the side of the equation where I was sitting on the board of directors of an enterprise that was sued by Granite Construction over something pretty similar to this. And the construction industry, as Steve well knows, is extremely litigious. You know, I would recommend to staff that we reject all bids, go back out to bid as quickly as possible with a short time frame, let them respond, you know, with full disclosure as to what's required. That's my suggestion.
This falls under the category of too quickly or too slowly. I think we want to go slowly on this one, and so I agree.
Member Rogers.
I also think we should reject all bids and go back out, but I have one caveat. If that causes us to only have one bidder, I think that there might be some negatives involved in that. Do we have any feel for whether, you know, with the properly written contract, we'll get more than one bidder?
Yes, I do believe that would be the case. All indications would point to the two lowest bidders would resubmit their bids at the very least, and that would allow fair competition at this point. If we maintained the A or the AB general engineering licensure, we may only get one bid in that route. So if we have it reworded to where you can have that or a specialty license, as long as it's the proper specialty licenses, I believe we'll have more than one bid, yes.
Vice Chair Bell.
Two questions. First one is, are we sure that all those different license types are acceptable? And secondly, what's the minimum timeline for rebidding?
Both good questions. Those two specialty licensures have been reviewed by the Nevada Contractors Board, that those are the acceptable licensures for this particular project. I wanted to find out if there was anything else beyond those two specialties that was required, and there was not. And in terms of timeline, NRS indicates that the project has to advertise once, and then no less than 21 days after that advertisement, you can open for bids. So as long as we get the advertisement out and to the public before next Wednesday, we can open up on June 20th, the day of the next board meeting, review the materials at that time, and then be able to present something to the board that night for approval or rejection at that point.
Was that our original timeline to have it done next month, or was it for this month?
Original timeline was for this month. However, when we are projecting out on dates and so forth, by having it go another month, it will probably put the project to after the air races for the initial start, which I know is a big concern for the airport. Trying to do something like this, closing down runways and taxiways during the air race time is not, you know, the right time to do it. So we believe it'll be pushed back towards it after the airports, the air races. Yeah.
Any other questions of Mr. Fitzgerald? Any public comment on this item? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion that we reject all bids and renotice the project for bids with the correct information in the written bid documents at the shortest possible time. So moved by Vice Chair Val, seconded by Mr. Barrett. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. Hearing none, motion carries. Item number six.
Just a question Mr. here, Harris. And that this really doesn't affect any of the thinking or voting or anything, or any of the talk. But is there, I mean, what are the consequences of the fact that the bidders know who has bid what? You know, this is like a do-over in baseball, and you know, now you know how well the guy swings at the fastball. So are there consequences in this bid process? Who do we owe an apology to? Those are the kinds of questions. This is a sort of an integrity thing for me. We would like to get this right the first time.
Yeah, let me take one crack at that. I don't know who we owe the apology to, but it's not a good thing for the bidders. The process is designed to be a sealed bid, so nobody else gets to see what anybody else is thinking or how they're structuring it. And the end result of rejecting the bids and rebidding it is people will have already seen. But I can tell you it's really kind of the only way you can go, particularly if you want to have any shot at getting the project done this season. We did in the past once before have a bid protest on an award of a bid. And the statutory process involves a series of pleadings going back and forth and a real court hearing. And that entire process would push us out of this construction season. In my opinion, the Q&D, if we didn't award it to Q&D, they would have a pretty solid basis to protest. And the flip side is the low bidder may have a valid reason to protest if we awarded it to Q&D because the representation was made by a member of the staff, by the airport engineer at the bid meeting, that these other licenses would be permitted. So, yeah, we owe some apologies, and it's not the optimum situation, but I think you're doing what you've just voted on is the best and probably the only way to go. I'll let Mr. Fitzgerald add anything that he can.
And on other notes, I have experienced rebiddings as well, and the numbers generally come in relatively the same. Unless somebody has left a large amount of money on the table, then they will make that up. And yes, once the bids do come out, the bid items are public knowledge at that point, the bid tabs. So this would have been seen by everybody else. You just would have been able to, you know, so that's where they made up of that extra money and so forth. So I don't think it's going to hurt the project in overall. We might have some slightly different numbers coming in at this point. So it doesn't happen very often, but it does move forward.
Thank you.
All right, we will move on to item number 6 for discussion and possible action. Authorize staff to submit the AWAS replacement estimate to the FAA for inclusion in the 2018-19 ACIP. Mr. Fitzgerald.
And Brian Fitzgerald again with Atkins. On this item, we had discussed at earlier meetings about the need to replace the equipment for the AWAS, which is getting close to expiring. I have received the updated cost from the manufacturer for this, and it included also a little bit of administrative cost. So the overall grant application we're putting in is for $35,100 to replace the equipment. And also, I did some more research back into the differences between the AWAS, ASOS, and so forth, as indicated by to the members. And essentially what we have is the biggest and best thing that the FAA will pay for at this time. In ASOS, which would be a brand new installation, possibly could do more for the airport, but would have to be funded from another source. And that may take a lot longer to get at this point. And in my opinion, the gamble to put in ASOS at this time could be upwards of a year or so to do, and that you might lose your AWAS at this point. So it's my thought that it would be best to replace the equipment and then continue to do the research to the ASOS and see if that is a necessary alternative for the airport in moving forward.
Questions of Mr. Fitzgerald? Vice Chair Bell.
Three questions. In your report, you said that the original unit was installed in 2010 for a cost of $97,000, and now the rebuild is only $35,000. What's the big spread there? Is it like $60,000 or $50,000 differential?
The remainder of the equipment and the occurrences, that's the difference between the current cost and the original cost. It also includes parts of construction to install all these things together and so forth. The overall project, I believe, was like $150,000. And that was to create what is currently out there. And then the actual equipment itself, obviously, is a lot less.
Okay. I was just asking because stuff like that normally doesn't get cheaper, so I was wondering why.
Well, it's not the full –
It's not the full build.
Correct. It's the basically the brains and a couple of sensors at this point.
Second question. You mentioned in your report right now that we have an AWAS 3 PT. What is the PT? What is that in terms of features? What are we getting?
The PT portion is present weather and thunderstorms. And so the different levels as you go up indicate what sensors you have on it. And so it has all the sensors from an AWAS 3 plus present weather and temperature, along with any of the items that would be included in a 2 or a 1. So.
Where would RVR come from? Would that have to be an ASOS, or can an RVR sensor be put onto an AWAS 3?
I don't have the answer to that, but I believe it is on an ASOS, but I'd have to double check that.
And last question was, did we solicit any kind of bids from other vendors other than just the one that built it?
No, we did not solicit from other vendors because most likely we would have to replace all components, as this is a proprietary type system just replace what is necessary to move forward. We went straight back to the manufacturer. And I believe since it is under a certain threshold that we can sole source that. Yeah, is that correct?
Yeah, under 50.
Yeah, under 50, yes.
Any other questions of Mr. Golden?
Anyway. Nice work, Brian. From my experience, that bid is, I know you sole sourced it. That's a very competitive number for what you're trying to do. So you got my support.
Well, I I don't take all the credit on that number. We did have the previous manager and Ken involved in soliciting that number from them, and we actually received that number last year, and it was within $10. So what they are giving us hasn't really changed over the past year, so I credit Ken as well.
Any other comments or questions? Any public comment on this item? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to approve the replacement of the AWOS using the updated estimate of costs and the update the ACIP accordingly.
Also move. Second.
I have a motion by Mr. Golden, a second by Vice Chair. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, no. Hearing none, motion carries. Okay, moving on to item H, Airport Engineers Report, Mr. Fitzgerald.
Back at it again, Brian Fitzgerald, Atkins, Airport Engineer. First of all, wanted to let you know that on the airport master plan update that we have going on, we scheduled the third planning advisory committee meeting for Wednesday, June 27th, 2 o'clock at the terminal building. There will also be another public meeting that evening at 5:30. We will. I'm sorry. That would be Wednesday, June 27th, 2 p.m. The invites for the other members outside of the airport authority will go out in a timely manner. There will be advertisements also in the, I believe, in the local paper. And the airport manager indicated that he wants to send out an email blast to the tenants as well for the public meeting, so that if there anybody else is interested, that they'll be able to attend. So we'll be getting the word out for that meeting. And then also Chairman Law asked me about the water riser for the lease parcel that was being discussed earlier, and that water riser will not be on top of the existing water line that's out there. It'll be near it, and the city shows on their water map that the current building for Heritage Hangars has a water fire service with a specific valve to that service, and I believe the exact same thing will be occurring on this next building farther up the road, so I don't believe there will be any issues at that point. Additionally, the Reno Carson Lumberyard, they did submit their 7460s to the FAA. I was able to pull those up online and see their initial submittals, so they are in that process of getting the approvals. The airport manager and I reviewed their plans initially as well. They did supply several cross sections from the runway taxiway showing the Part 77 surface and where their appearances would be throughout the site. And it was our opinion that there won't be any issues at that point. And if there are anything that are close, I believe the FAA would indicate that you would need to put a an obstruction light on top of the light stand or something like that. So in that respect, I believe they've done everything they need to do. They just need to get the determination from the FAA at that point. Otherwise, that's all I have so far from my report. And any questions?
Vice Chair.
One item that wasn't in the report. I've noticed Texaways Alpha and Delta lately have some really high weeds that are coming up out of the cracks. What are we doing for remediation on that? I guess both engineer and management. Is there something being delayed because of this improvement work, or are we just behind, or what's going on?
Well, it was partially due to the terminal building project, trying to get that completed, the painting and all that. Gary is going on vacation beginning Friday. We'll be back first week in June. So that's our immediate need, is to take care of that issue. I don't see that getting done. He's here one day tomorrow, so I don't think they'll make any headway on that. We got a couple other things we need to take care of prior to his departure.
And to add to that, it's the intent of the taxways project that if there is any vegetation in the cracks, that it would be killed, burned off, blown out, and so forth. But if Gary has gotten to it prior to this project, then obviously that wouldn't be something the contractor would need to do.
Okay, that was my concern, is whether we were delaying it because of this work that was upcoming or if we were just behind. And I would like to stress to management that we take that a little bit more seriously in the future. We've had flat tires in the past from airplanes that rolled across weeds that had spiny thorns and stuff like that. And I it's happened on two occasions in the last 3 years where we've had planes that rolled over weeds, and the thorns from the weeds ended up lodging the tire, and we had to go take a disabled airplane out of there because it couldn't move.
And Gary and I did do a runway taxiway inspection. We had that discussion due to the rain over the last month or so. That's also been a hindrance to us getting on top of that, putting Weed Be Gone or Weed Killer on there and during rainy portions. But he and I have both looked at that, and that is our plan at the moment.
Any further questions? All right, moving on to the airport manager's report. Mr. Moen.
Hi, Ken Moen, airport manager. As of yesterday, I've been here 60 days in a row. Yeah. And on top of that, we're 30 days out from our open house, so no pressure. My first 60 days, I've been focusing on meeting a lot of community leaders and the FBO tenants. I've already had one general tenant meeting that Chair Law and Member Harris attended back in May. Roughly, I've had over 35 meetings in the community so far. On May 17th, I came to this building here and addressed the City Council and public comment period. I'd already met with all the City Council members, but it gave me an opportunity to meet other people that show up to those meetings, like the DA and some other folks and that nature. But that was my intent to do that, strictly as a I'm the new guy, and I'd like to get to meet all of you. As you know, instituted by the previous interim manager was a traffic count procedure of game cameras at the approach ends of both 9 and 27. And this is our third reading of those. And for March, the traffic count was at 413. Well, for April, it's at 1,388. So a little bit of improvement. The weather got some more folks out and flying. So we're going to kind of track that over and see what kind of trends we develop. We're also going to track the type aircraft that are operating at the airport. In reference to our master plan and the forecast, I think that's really critical to look at those fleet mix that's utilizing our field. I attended my second Young Eagles event on May 12th to observe their operation. There were 25 participants that day, and it was a great event for EAA. I think they do a really good job. We did discuss what their decision-making process was regarding fly or no-fly, and basically a crosswind component in excess of 6 knots is kind of their mark, and that may have had something to do with their previous incident in February. But they seemed to adhere to that and were really spot on the safety aspect of the operation. On May 9th, we did have, however, a gear-up landing on runway 27 about 8:15 in the morning. The pilot of the aircraft was not injured other than his pride, but we did discuss what occurred during the event. And he indicated that it was his fault and not lowering the gear down. So during my coordination with the FAA physio office in Reno, they indicated that we could go ahead and remove the aircraft. We received written permission from the pilot. He selected a individual to assist him with the removal. Actually, it became quite a community event. There were a lot of tenants on the field that came out, a lot landed equipment in hand, and they were able to get the aircraft, the weight off of the aircraft, and extend the gear and then push it off, which was, we were closed about 45 minutes. And I think there was one flight that was delayed a little bit. But the procedure that Steve had outlined earlier, both to the NVAA conference and he did discuss here also with the board, was basically the procedure that we followed. I am formalizing some more documentation as far as official form, and we're going to put together a go bag that Gary will have in the airport vehicle. So if a situation does occur like that, we'll have the proper forms and other documentation to be able to address that situation. But we did get the runway closed through Reno Tower contacting NorCal, and then got it open, like I said, about 45 minutes later. The terminal project building, or the terminal building, is still a project that is continuing methodically. If you haven't been in there recently, we have finished the painting on the interior. It looks nice, but still has a heck of an echo, And so we're looking at addressing that. There may be a I'm getting some quotes on some work. We're talking about carpeting it, whether it's full carpet or we do like large sections on the east and the west end. But we're also looking at some sort of fabric on the walls to help absorb some of that sound. So we'll be testing that. But a lot of that's going to be more as an ad-needed basis going on. I'd like to have some impact to that by the time we do our public meeting on June 27th. So I'll see where those lie. Whether I'm going to get some quotes on replacing the single-pane windows that are not tempered, and also the doorways, which are not coated either because they don't have crash bars on those doors. So once those doors are locked and somebody's inside, they could be trapped theoretically. So we're going to look at those, and I'll come back to the board with cost estimates on that kind of stuff. We had the good fortune of getting Gary Province into the airport safety and operations specialist class that was given yesterday and today at R&O. I guess that was one of the benefits to knowing some folks up there. They reached out to me and asked me if there was somebody here in our airport that would benefit from attending that class, and so we jump right on that. And so I expect Gary and I to be able to help educate him both on the process of runway taxiway maintenance, and also when we do self-inspections, to how we can do that a little bit more methodically and record keeping. So we'll look to implement that stuff here over the near term. I was approached by Tim Miller from I guess it depends on your pronunciation of the name. It could be Muller or Mueller, but from NDOT, about sitting on the Transportation Planning and Advisory Committee. That committee was formed under the NDOT for the purpose of advising, providing input, and interacting with NDOT management staff on transportation issues in Nevada. And it's kind of a holistic approach to the entire state. Bobby Thompson was the representative from this area. And she took as you may have heard, took a position with the Reno Air Race Association as well as managing the Minden Airport, and has stepped down from that committee. And they've asked me to, if I'd be interested in accepting that appointment. So with the blessing of the board, I will follow up with him. If the board feels that might be a hindrance to my activity, please let me know, and I'd be happy to share that with them as well. I do have two FAA events I'm participating in the near future. One is at the CVI in Minden on May 30th, and that is basically a discussion between the local pilot group in Minden and the FAA regarding non-towered operations, and they wanted to include Carson City in that since a lot of those people cross-pollinate and utilize both airports. And then the other is out in Dayton. It's actually a fast presentation or seminar, which is a FAA safety team presentation, and pilots can actually be awarded points towards a certificate, which can help them lower their insurance rate. So those are both great opportunities, I believe. For one, both those airports have been on my list to visit since I came down here, so I'll be able to utilize that opportunity to do those two trips and two purposes at the same time. Another interesting opportunities have been presented to us, and that is the Nevada Institute for Autonomous Systems has reached out to me. You may recall that I did some work with them in March out at the State Airport and prior to being hired here, and they believe that Carson City Airport is uniquely situated to bring VIPs out for testing. Where Stead's kind of out in the hinterland, and they also believe that we have the facilities that would be of value. And when they, as NIAS as they're called, and NASA do work on traffic management issues. I've observed and worked both the operation out at Stead, and this is a very systematic and safety-minded approach. I don't believe it would be a hindrance to our organization. I'd like us to take a deep dive into this letter of agreement with the help of counsel and look at the benefit to this. my initial blush on this is, one, we would establish range fees for use of our facilities that we can get some revenue from, but also I think it would as you know, the industry is certainly moving into autonomous vehicles, whether it's on the ground or in the air. And I think that this would give us an opportunity to attract future companies or operators out to our airport and at least have folks come out and see it, especially in raising our visibility within the community and the state. So I'd like us to take a look at that. As you know, the open house is scheduled for June 23rd. We have a open house planning committee of which Member Harris, Member Rogers both participate in. And we are making satisfactory progress on this. I feel like we've been behind the eight ball since we started due to the short time frame of trying to get this thing off the ground. But Dirk is, and his wife are both assisting on this planning committee, so that gives us some continuity from last year. And he's participated numerous times, as well as Gary Province and a couple of our other tenants. We're about 50% of our fundraising goal. We were rather ambitious in trying to raise funds for this project, but I think we're getting along. So we're kind of at a deadline period for this initial effort, and that deadline is so that we can get companies' logos on the poster, and which we're going to print here in the next week. So we're trying to help close the deal on that, and then we also have some unique opportunities for them to distribute some airport stickers depending on their level of participation, or even a glider with their logo on it. And one of our platinum sponsors is Carson Air Group, so they're going to get 250 customized gliders with both the Carson Airport and the their own logo on it to hand out to kids. So it'll be kind of a unique environment. If you want one of those, you got to go over there to get it. So we're pretty excited about that. At this time, we don't have any military support scheduled. I've submitted the required Department of Defense forms to the various agencies. We've been certified by the Navy to get to be eligible for a performer or static display, but nothing's scheduled yet. I've been in communication with Captain Halloran out at Fallon Naval Air Station. He has access to limited assets. It's primarily the search and rescue stuff. But we're working with him, and we're also working with the Nevada Air National Guard at Reno Hempstead. But we've really kind of flipped the emphasis on the open house to GA aircraft and really focusing on what you're going to see when you come to an airport like Carson City. And we're trying to really focus around the attendees, the kids, the youth, that, hey, this is your first entry into aviation. You don't start out in the F-18 as much as you'd like. So we want to really show them the variety of aircraft and opportunity in our industry. Two more things real quick. Applied Technologies came out and did a pavement survey on behalf of NDOT, and they did it on May 20th. So that's going to be some great information that we're going to get back on our facilities that we didn't have to pay for, which is nice. And JFG Systems has given us a quote for setting up the new email. If you recall, with the ruling on personal email and personal devices, that we felt this was best to set up individual email addresses for all the board members, as well as myself and Gary Province. And the cost for that is nominal. It's $716 to set them up for 9 addresses, and that includes the archiving ability for all that. And that concludes my report.
Thank you very much. Moving on to the legal counsel's report.
Yeah, I just have just one item. Steve Takas, Airport Counsel. When we were listening to the report on the Sierra Skyways project, the engineer, Mr. Schaefer, had mentioned that they had resolved the special use permit issue. There's one other element of that, and I think he deserves the credit, although I have to say candidly, both Hope Sullivan and Lee Plemmel in the City Planning Department have been solution finders for us. They've been very helpful to us. What we learned is that and maybe they knew it, I didn't know it, none of us knew it, is that the airport is actually zoned general recreation, I think is the category. It's the same thing as all the parks are, which means that anything you want to build, you need a special use permit for. And I learned this when I was voicing my opinion, which is, how can the airport be zoned something that we have to get a special use permit to build a hangar? It's the one thing you want us to build on the airport. And the answer was, well, because there isn't a special zoning district for the airport. Maybe there should be. However, to Lee Plummel's credit, he suggested what's probably a good solution. Instead of going to try and change all the zoning maps, which is a pretty big undertaking, he suggested that we file a special use permit, one special use permit to cover the entire airport for construction of hangars, and to the extent we construct buildings for equipment storage, I guess we would include that too, because if you ever build a block of T-hangers, they're nested, and you always end up with two little chunks at the end that aren't big enough for an airplane, but they're big enough for, you know, maybe aviation-related equipment. And so my recommendation is that, and I'll get together with the airport manager on this, is that we file that. Now, there isn't any urgency right now. The urgency that Mr. GM Greco had is he had ordered all this equipment, the engineer's ready to go, and then he's informed by city planning that he has to get a new special use permit and go through that entire process. Thankfully, Hope Sullivan saw a solution to that, which is there actually was one for that project, and because the project was started by the construction of some of the hangars, that means that special use permit didn't expire. It's still valid. So she found a solution to the immediate situation, but I think long-term, you know, we want there to be good development, and in the spirit of trying to remove the roadblocks and the things that slow down development on our airport, filing a general special use permit would go a long way. And so that's the only thing I have to report on.
I think that that would be a great idea to put on the next agenda, because I think that the day I got the call from Mr. Gian Greco, he was almost in tears, and I don't blame him. The idea of the special use permit for hangars was just way beyond me. But that, again, gets back to the institutional knowledge that does or doesn't exist because of the term limits that are imposed upon the board members. All right, moving on to the treasurer's report, Mr. Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, we're still on a journey. Mr. Moan and I going through this, and Mr. Moan learning about QuickBooks and digging into some of these line items. I am excited about getting into the next budget year when I think we'll really have an understanding of every line item. The good news is if you look, you'll see that we're on track on our budget, but there's little things. Like an example would be if you look and see income and airport leases, 5,400 sponsorships, miscellaneous, you're seeing a $9,000. And I asked what's in that because I wasn't aware of any sponsorship. So I'm going to leave that to Ken. Maybe you can give us a, you know, kind of what you've started to find. So the good, I'll almost put it this way, the numbers are right. Where they are, we're going to do a little work on.
Interestingly enough, under this item, there was a reimbursement for appraisal for SMB Aviation. There was a Kimmel appraisal update. Those two alone are $5,000. Mountain West helicopters, there was some parking fee for $90. GEICO insurance claim payment for fence damage, that was like $1,700. The Boy Scouts excess donation for the barbecue area was like $720. I'm still trying to, I'm scratching my head at this one. The purchase of an obsolete crack sealer model unit for $10.
And I can tell you what that is.
Oh, wow. Is that that?
That's out
by the AWOS?
Yes, that's the piece of equipment that had been out in the rain and the snow for years. It didn't work, and we sold it to get it off the property because it was dangerous.
It still doesn't work, yeah, yeah. Right. It's still on the property.
But Dirk will take that away, trust me.
Yeah, and then there was a couple other small items, another fence damage for $1,000, and then closing out, there was a credit on Tim Rose's credit account when it closed out. So they're all over the place.
Well, the point being is we're going to get all those in the correct places over the next few months, work with Beth, and to hope to finalize the year with these in the right places, so a little clearer for all of us, and starting our next budget year clean for Ken so he knows where exactly all these go, and he has more control over that. So right now it's been doing some archaeology and going, why was that there? And these were definitely sponsorships that seemed to become a miscellaneous category. I don't know why. But anyway, if you have any questions, we're our best to answer them. The good news is exactly we're on track as we move forward to end our year.
I might add to that, it's kind of convenient that these were all in that one place. It would be a lot easier. It is a lot easier to find them there and allocate them appropriately than if they had been put in just wherever they thought they should be. So there is always that. Yes. Next, Mr. Rogers.
Thank you very much for the archaeology work. I think that'll be very fun and illuminating. I want to say that as a person on the board that hasn't worked in a government for a government entity, only for private entities, that the budget process and going through the budget process for the first time, the budget process doesn't match what I'm used to in terms of budgeting. You know, my approach to or a thought process relative to budgeting, that the budget is the primary way that the executives of an organization, i.e. us, communicate to the managers of the organization, i.e. Ken, what's important to us. And we structure the budget so that we can clearly identify the areas that we want to be applying energy to. That it's a forward-looking document, not just a recording of what has happened during the course of the year. So I'm asking that we include that in our thought process as we work on the budget. We turn it into a budget and a budget process that looks more like what a private enterprise might do, as opposed to have it be forward-looking in addition to backward-looking. I'm also volunteering to participate in that if you think it'd be useful.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And yes, you will be dragged into the process. I think the process is, I think when you walk through the full process, it will help you see there probably was more going on behind the scenes in formulating this process. It was also a little difficult because Ken was jumped in right at the beginning of having to create this budget process when he was brand new to it. But I think I would love to have you engaged and see it and advise as to maybe how much more we bring out to the board at what time. But I mean, we are interesting in many of these items we don't have choices on in the way it's spent, you know, unlike a business where we might say one marketing dollars, it's like we have very limited ability. However, I agree with you in principle, it'd be a great way to see how do we put that lens on it and how do we make it look that way to this board and the public. I totally agree with that. So I'm happy to have you engage.
If I could just add a thought or at least some terminology to this, the kind of thing that I'm used to seeing is sort of a second level of budgeting, and that is a project level budgeting. So you can say, at the beginning of your budget process, these are the five or six big projects that we're working on, and those projects kind of roll up, and it gives you another level to look at. For example, probably the open house would be one of those things where you would budget at the project level, and it would go in front of the board. Okay, so it actually, a backup for what rolls up into the overall budget. And there may be some other as we go along and we put more and more ugly things on Ken's plate, we'll want to look at things more like project costs and less like the high level.
Okay, thank you. Further comments, Mr. Rogers?
I'll just briefly say my thoughts, just as a preview of what we'll be talking about, is that I like to see a separation occur between costs that are direct costs, that directly impact our ability to market to the airport or grow the airport, separated out from what I'll call SG&A or overhead type costs that are just requirements that have to be met. Because we certainly would want our manager to be focusing constantly on reducing SG&A costs and maximizing the amount of our expenses that are going towards activities that cause the airport to be more desirable or more ready to grow.
Thank you. Moving on to item L, report from authority members. The one item I would have here is that I have been in contact with the treasurer's office regarding the local government investment program. I have submitted the information to them for them to submit to the treasurer and the attorney general to see if we qualify. and I am waiting to hear back from them and should hear back from them before our next meeting. Any other review of projects or internal communications or reports from authority members? Seeing none, we'll move on to public comment. I assume there is no public comment at this time, but if there is, please come forward. None seen. Anybody who has an item for the next regular meeting's agenda, please contact Mr. Mullen for inclusion on that agenda. And at that point, if there's no further comment or discussion, we are adjourned.